the nation's capital. This is DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Today's program, ladies and gentlemen, is on hiring offenders. Throughout the United States, there's a problem with employment and people on parole and probation supervision. Most criminologists believe that if employment levels rose, it would reduce recidivism, crime, and would save the state's tens of millions of dollars. To discuss this issue today, we have three esteemed gentlemen. Charlie Whitaker, he is CEO of Career Path DC. We have Corey Laborde, he is the facilities manager for the Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church, and Tony Lewis, job developer for the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And to Mr. Laborde and to Charlie and to Tony, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thanks for having us, Lynn.
Good afternoon, sir.
Gentlemen,
it's my pleasure.
Where do we go to with this topic? I've talked to dozens of employers here in the District of Columbia in a previous life throughout the state of Maryland who basically tell me, I've got 20, 30 applicants for every job or more. Most of them, or a lot of them, do not have criminal histories. They don't have criminal backgrounds. You're asking me to hire somebody who is currently on parole and probation supervision. You want to have that discussion with me. I'm here to tell you I don't want to hire that person because I've got plenty of people to choose from who don't come from histories of crime and who don't come from histories of substance abuse. How do we at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency and all parole and probation agencies, how are we supposed to contend with that problem?
Right. Well, Len, let's just jump straight into it. My name is Corey Laborde. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
When I'm hiring somebody, when I'm interviewing somebody, I'm not interviewing somebody based off their past. I'm interviewing them and hiring them based off what they can give the company going forward in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, past is important because you have to look at past behavior to see whether or not that may play a conflict with inside your organization.
Mm-hmm.
But, however, just because someone is being interviewed who do not have a past, a criminal background, let's be precise, doesn't mean that he's the best person for that job. You may have somebody who may have a past offense, may have done something in his past that he's ashamed of. He or she put it behind him, but it may be the best person for the job that you are interviewing that person for.
Mm-hmm.
They probably have experience in that line of work. They probably have a career that they already done before they made that offense. So I don't want to have a blind eye saying I will not hire this person just because they made a mistake 15, 10 years ago.
You're trying to get the very best person for the job, regardless of that person. Background.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because it does seem to me, Charlie, that what we have is a conundrum. We're not asking anybody to hire sex offenders for daycare centers. We're not asking anybody to hire somebody who's been convicted of fraud to handle money in a bank. But what we are doing is talking about appropriate placements. We're talking about people who are doing well. We're talking about people who are months, if not years, from the last positive drug test. We're talking about, in many cases, skilled human beings, but 50% unemployment. That's what we have here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. And when I talk to my counterparts throughout the country, that's not unusual. How do we get beyond all this?
Well, I think one thing is the program that you have set up here at CSOSA actually helps out a lot. I work with Tony Lewis real closely, and with the offenders that you guys send me to work with within the community, they worked out just fine based on they go through a life skills and job readiness program, and we also are afforded the opportunity to allow our people to come and work for anywhere from 3 to 6 months in order to, you know, to really just build on their skills and to just find out if they work really good with our organization. So by the time it comes time to hire these individuals, that's why I've been so successful with us hiring as many people as we have hired, based on the fact that they've been trained, and a trained individual, regardless of their background, works out extremely well. Also, appropriate placements.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you speak on that. So when someone is sent to me from CSOSA, and I think this is a best practice right here, me and Tony talk on where can they work, what type of charges they have, and if he does have a sex offender, for example, because even individuals who have heinous crimes need to work within our community.
Mm-hmm.
We'll identify, you know, a situation where they can come and work with us in a situation where it won't, you know, affect the rest of the public, or that it wasn't, you know, that the lowest safety risk possible and the best placement for that individual.
All right, Tony, you and I have had this conversation about 500 times.
Yes.
And our dilemma is, I mean, we've just spoke to two employers here, and we've spoken to Charlie and Corey, and so they're on board. Are all employers out there on board?
Absolutely not.
Okay, and so they're not because of why?
I think they're not because they don't understand that we have talent within our ranks, so to speak. And we're not just asking for a handout. We actually have people that can come in and increase your productivity. We have people that have skill sets that match what you're looking for. And their criminal history or criminal background doesn't necessarily get in the way of that. But another, I think the biggest impediment or barrier to it is that just from a hiring policy standpoint, a lot of the companies, especially here locally in the District of Columbia, have such a broad no felony accepted kind of stance that it really handicaps our ability to connect our talents and people with a lot of the positions. Mr. Labor's organization and Charlie's organization have been brave enough and courageous enough to embark upon this journey with us in terms of the program, where we're able to do a transitional employment style program where you get an opportunity to kind of test drive our talent. And they've seen how the individuals that we've sent have been able to come in and help them do what they do better. And they've been able to bring them on full term and full time. And I think that's what we look to do with many more organizations. I just wish people would show a little more flexibility in their hiring policies and look at people on a case-by-case basis.
We have radio and television shows on our website. It's www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov. Where it's called employing people on supervision, and we ask people to listen to the radio shows, watch the television shows, and to contact us to have a conversation with us regarding this whole issue. I mean, if you're not, tell us why. If you are, tell us why. But what we're looking for is your opinion. We're crowdsourcing this issue. We want as many people involved. Tony, I'm going to go back to something that you said and toss it over to Charlie and Corey. You said courageous. Now, wait a minute. That doesn't fit. I mean, we're not saying be courageous. We're saying that we've got talented, skilled people ready to go that's going to affect your bottom line and affect the ability for you to get the job done, regardless as to whether or not they've had a criminal history. Why is that courageous? I mean, isn't that good business sense?
Well, it is, but when you're talking about the stigma and the fear that comes along with people with criminal background, it takes courage to be able to accept that fear and be able to take a chance. And I think any employer out there, any business out there that says, you know what, we're going to give somebody a second chance to live their lives in a positive way and to be able to contribute their skills and their talents to my organization, I think they definitely are courageous. And I hope there's a lot more courageous people out there. I hope these two courageous guys can inspire some other business leaders and they can be an example of how things can work. And everybody that we sent to either one of them didn't work out, but they didn't allow that to necessarily, sour their outlook. And that one guy be a represent that one bad apple to be a representative of, you know, the thousands of people that we have coming through our doors every
sure.
day. Yeah.
There's information on tax credits and a bonding program. Again, www.csosa.gov, right on our front page. Corey, you wanted to say something?
Yes, well, I want to shy in and just say, you know, for one, you know, when you're hiring or firing somebody, you're not hiring and firing them based off something they did 10, 15 years ago. You're hiring and firing them based off what's going on right now.
Right.
You know, you can have an individual. For one, you know, I have maybe like 16 staff, and with all of them, men and women, you know, different nationalities and all, you know, all of them is trained to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you're hiring them, and you ask them to do something, you may have somebody who never done anything,
mm-hmm.
never as far as criminal law is concerned, never
right.
broke a criminal law on record,
right?
Right. And you may have another individual who probably did 10, 15 years ago. He's ashamed of. He's ready to move on. He's ready to put that behind. He's ready to go forward.
Right.
I learned, but dealing with C. Sosa, since the partnership came about, along with my organization, Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church, which is, you know, pastored by one of the men who gave me the same type of passion, Archbishop Alfred A. Owens,
right.
Who look at people for what they can be and not what they were.
And have a national reputation
absolutely.
In terms of working
and
with people
very,
in the community.
And my pastor has been very successful at that based on, I'll give you an example. You may have an individual who may come up and you may hire them because they don't have any pass whatsoever.
Right.
All right. But that person is ready to get a pass because they just didn't get caught with some of the things they probably already done got away with.
Right.
You may have another individual that you shun away because of his past, but he or she really do not want to do those things no more. They're ready to move forward. They already done put their hand inside the cookie jar before he got caught.
Right.
So they wouldn't do that again.
Sure.
You know, so they were ready to give you 5, 10 years, 15 years of longevity, where you have another individual who probably still got his hand in the cookie jar, constantly put his hand in the cookie jar. He just never got caught doing it. And then you wind up hiring that person based off of those circumstances, and they wind up letting you down.
All right, Charlie. But again, let's go back to what I've heard from employers so many times. I've got 30 people. 15 have histories, criminal histories. 15 don't. I'm automatically looking to hire from that group of 15 who don't, because why not? I mean, all things being equal, I'd rather dip into the pool that doesn't have a criminal history than those who do. Is that a realistic expectation on the part of a business person? Should that person do that? That's what I hear most often from the employment community.
Well, I know as a small business owner, I don't think that's relevant because with my organization, I found that CSOSA has been a great help as far as supporting us, as far as supervision of the individuals that we work with. They have job developers as well as job coaches. So whenever there's an issue of raise on the job, you know, I can make a contact with Tony and call him and say, Tony, well, the guy's a couple of minutes late,
mm-hmm.
Been a couple of minutes late 3 times, 4 times. Can you talk to him? Tony will talk to him and get him back on track. However, with my individuals who are not under supervision, when they late for work, that's an issue for me to deal with. And, you know, it just doesn't seem relevant at this point for me because the support that I receive from your office, CSOSA, I mean, it really helps me as a small business person because, it's money. It's money on the table. When I got to stop doing what I'm doing to come in and talk to people about, you know, them being late for work or about them, you know, the productivity and things of that nature, you know, it's a bottom line for me. So to have CSOSA there to assist me with that, it's like having an extra supervisor on call that I could call and
go.
Say, you know, hey, I need some assistance today, and believe it, they come right on over.
But that's what we're selling, gentlemen. I think Tony and I, we've been down this path dozens and dozens of times. We're selling quality people, in many cases with real skills, with a real work history, who don't have a substance abuse background, who have been years since their last criminal activity.
Sure.
And I've had them before these microphones dozens and dozens of times. I've had them on television, I've had them on radio, and they're sitting there in a three-piece suit, and they're skilled human beings, but they're unemployed because 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, they got involved in a criminal activity, and they are completely changed people now. So what we're pitching is don't give us a handout. What we're pitching is that we're good for your bottom line.
Absolutely. And you know, it's one of those things as well where you find that you know, again, all this stuff is really about stigma and you know, a small percentage of individuals making mistakes that have had an adverse effect on many. And you have things that have happened in throughout society, and then we make these so-called policies that's supposed to protect us from, you know, whatever happens. And then it has, again, these adverse effects. I mean, even in terms of when you see things, I mean, all the crazy things that I hear that happen, like on the job, or there's people going postal, what have you, those typically aren't people with criminal backgrounds, you know. Or when you hear about, you know, but you have shows like Lock Up that's on TV, and you got these things that, you know, you see the cameras going into prison, and people have these things in the back of their mind, like, oh, wow, well, when that guy gets out of prison, I wouldn't want him or her to
mm-hmm.
come and work beside me. And I really think that affects the psyche in the sense that people don't even understand that some people, crimes, they don't even have a rational relationship to the job. Like, so if I had a drug offense when I was 18 and now I'm 27, why can't I be a janitor at your business?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where's the conflict, right? Like, you know, things like that. That's just a basic example, but I think that's what we have to do. Companies have to look at the people on a case-by-case basis.
Both Charlie and Corey mentioned it, and that is that when you hire somebody who is under our supervision, you get Tony Lewis, you get other people that work along the side of Tony Lewis who will intervene, help you out. You get the community supervision officer, otherwise yes. throughout the country known as a parole and probation agent. Vocation development specialist. You have a team of people who will help you deal with whatever comes up in terms of that individual. You get tax credits. You get a bonding program because that really does protect you in terms of your own liability. So there are assets at our disposal, at your disposal to hire people. And when, again, the emphasis is not somebody fresh out of prison. We're not talking about the sex offender in the daycare center. We're talking about people with real skills who are months, if not years, away from their last substance abuse history, months, if not years, away from their last crime. But we have a 50% unemployment problem. So that stigma, getting beyond that stigma, is proving to be very difficult. Charlie or Corey, you want to weigh in on this, that stigma?
Yeah, may come off subject a little bit, but I go back to it.
Go ahead.
You know, I had a situation. You know, we had in D.C. we've been not so blessed with this heavy snow this winter.
Yeah, right.
Very unexpected winter. So you know I have Accenture employees, and dealing with the snow. And I had the Accenture employees. You know, I had the relationship I got with C. Sosa and some of the individuals that sent me. But one stuck to mind. Her name was Monica Womack, a female.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we got the snow detail going on, and the essential employees, they've been there for a few years. They know what time they're supposed to be to work. They know the routine, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a young lady just came about with the program. She's ready to work.
Mm-hmm.
She calls me 11 o'clock at night on my personal phone.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Corey, what time can you use me? What time can I be to work? What time I need to be to work?
Mm-hmm.
Et cetera, et cetera. I said, well, monitor your phone. I would love to have your help out of there. Dealing with the snow, we can never have enough help.
That's right.
Anyway, I sent out the email and said what time everybody's expected to be to work. I get there an hour early before the crew. Don't you know this young lady was there waiting on me?
There you go.
Public transportation was not even running that morning.
Mm-hmm.
She walked from Maryland Avenue all the way to Rhode Island Avenue
right.
just so she can be to work on time.
Right.
You know, now, I share that story to say I looked at this individual and say this is an individual I will hire when the program is up.
Right.
Because you showed me that you really want to work. Never mind the fact of what she did 15, 20 years ago, even if it was 3 years ago. I don't have to always use the word 10. It can be 5 years ago.
Right.
But she's ready to change. And you can have individuals that may be a decorated soldier. He may be a decorated soldier. He probably went to Iraq and fought for our country.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably came back home and got into a drunken bar fight, and, you know, defended mm-hmm. his little sister or defended his wife or something. And he hit somebody and got a simple assault charge. Do that mean that this person is not capable of being an engineer? That mean that he's not capable of working at your facility because he made a mistake that one time,
sure.
You know. So you know, you have to have a broader mind and look past some of these things.
We're more than halfway through the program. Today's program is on hiring offenders. We have Charlie Whitaker, CEO of Career Path DC. We have Corey Laborde, the facilities manager for the Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church, one of the most renowned religious organizations in our area and well known throughout the world and throughout the United States. Rather, and Tony Lewis, job developer for CSOSA, talking about what it takes to get people that we currently have under supervision, what it takes to get them hired. You know, the issue is that for every person sitting in this room and every person listening to this radio show today, we've all had our problems in the past. I won't speak for the three of you, but certainly I have done things way back in my youth that if I was caught, maybe I would have been caught up in the criminal justice system. And I've always said that my first encounter in the criminal justice system was being arrested. So the point is that all of us could suffer a fate that hangs over our heads for the rest of our life. If what we're saying is true, then it is a stigma. If 50% of our folks are unemployed, then what Tony is saying is true, that people cannot get beyond the fact that that person was caught up in the criminal justice system. People cannot get beyond that stereotype. And that bothers me, because if we don't give individuals an opportunity, then that means the greater chance for them to go back into the criminal justice system. That means a greater chance for more crime. And that has a real cost of literally tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars for states throughout the United States in terms of taking somebody back in the criminal justice system who may not be there if they were employed. The research is pretty clear that the more they're employed, the better they do. Absolutely. So isn't it in everybody's collective best interest to look beyond that criminal charge and to take a hard look at that person in terms of making that decision as to who to hire?
Yes, that's true. And just speaking on that stigma, that stigma piece, many times people do look at people that's coming back to the community for being incarcerated as untrustworthy and things of that nature. But you got to look at this thing from this point of view. A lot of people that I work with, this is their last chance.
Mm-hmm.
When they come to me and they feel like this is their last chance at, you know, putting their life back on track. So these individuals, they're not going to do anything to go back to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And the process that they go through to determine whether they're coming into our program, you know, is a lengthy process. So by the time they get to us, you know, it's like these are the best individuals for the job. So they're hardworking, they dependable. They loyal. These are the individuals that came in every time it snowed. These are the guys that came to the job.
Because they understand that they're not in a position to jump from one job to the other, that this is one of the few chances that they're going to get. Thereby, they turn out to be pretty good employees. Go ahead, Corey.
Right. Yeah. I've been so impressed with some of the individuals that came through the CSOSA program that I definitely want to make sure I point this out before we end this.
Go ahead.
Is that I actually hired a few of them. You know, I just didn't have them come through the program and say, okay, send me another 10 people, send me another 15 people.
Right.
I called Tony and said, look, how long more this guy got or this woman got before her program is up? There's been a few conversations we had like this.
Several.
And he may say, I'm looking at it now, and so and so may graduate in 2 months or whatever. I said, well, I can't wait that long. I want to hire him. I got a position open. I don't know how long this window is going to stay open. Mm-hmm. I want to hire him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because and then I don't want to put a stigma on them and say they're only good for cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're only good for housekeeping. You know, I have one guy now that we're training to be an engineer, you know, inside our organization, because he's shown that he has handyman skills. You know, he's proven himself, you know, above and beyond, you know. So, you know, you can look at these individuals and put a stigma all you want, but you have to ask yourself, you know, it could be your nephew, it could be your niece, it can be your son, you know, that made a mistake when they was 15, 17, 18 years old, and do you want them to still have that on them when they get older?
Right now, you are talking to congressional aides, you're talking to aides to mayors, you're talking to aides to county executives, you're talking to aides to governors, you're talking to criminal justice leadership. But you're talking to a lot of people who have input in terms of policy throughout the country. What would you say to directly to them? To that right now, to that congressional aid, to that aid to the governor of Arizona, what do you say to that person to move people beyond this stereotype of people in the criminal justice system?
Well, that's a question I would love to answer for those that's listening, that's in positions to make decisions. The first person come to my mind is a young man I hired through the program. His name was Kenneth Trice. Kenneth came about through the CSOSA program, and he was just looking for a chance. And he was so appreciative of the chance that he didn't want to do anything to do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he impressed us so that we hired him. We had a part-time position came open, and we hired him for the part-time position.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly right after the part-time position, wasn't even a cold 3 months, a full-time position came open, and he was a candidate for it. Why I'm sharing this story about Kenneth, I remember Kenneth came inside my office one time, Lynn, and he was very disturbed. He was going through some stuff with his children's mother, and he was trying to move on with himself. And he got two little girls.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why I'm talking to the people who make decisions. Those two little girls, they now have a father that can bring something home, can go and go Christmas shop because he got a decent check, an honest check,
mm-hmm.
that he can bring it home. So now the people who are making decisions, who's changing laws, who's changing legislations, look at it. You're not just helping that one person. You're helping the people that's behind them that's coming next. Mm-hmm. Because it's the domino effect. Now that Kenneth can come and make honest living, he can come and do something for these two little girls, he's now giving them the opportunity to maybe potentially be nice young ladies coming into society. Now, if it was the opposite way, it would have been Kenneth being bad, the two girls being bad. Now you got three individuals inside the community that's a threat to society. Instead, you got three individuals inside the community that's actually being a good to the society based off the CSOSA program.
Charlie, do you want to take a shot at that? You're now talking to the aide to the governor of Hawaii.
Well, you know, unemployment is a public safety issue. And that's how I attack it when I'm working with people. And I would like for them to see it that way, that an individual who's working is less likely to commit a crime. Individuals who are out here and without employment, who's struggling day to day, living in poverty, those are the individuals who in most instances will take that chance that's going to send them back to jail and hurt other people's families. Mm-hmm. So when you look at employment, it's a lot cheaper to give a person a job paying $13, $14 an hour so that they can take care of their family than the government paying $40,000, $50,000 a year to incarcerate this person. And now the government not only got to take care of this person, but now they got to take care of this person's family.
Right.
So when you look at it at the bottom line, it'll come out a lot cheaper for everybody. And you know, I don't really want to talk about the human side of it, mm-hmm. because that's something totally different. But, you know, it's a human side to this thing, too. When you got an individual who's trying to take care of their families and it's no way that they can do it legitimately, so now they turn to something that can get them incarcerated, and now they are taken away from their family. And this also costs not just the community, but it costs everybody, because now our taxes go up and things of that nature.
Sure.
So I think this is something that policymakers really got to look at. You know, if you really want to bring down the deficit, let's do things where we can create jobs for individuals instead of building prisons.
Gentlemen, we only have 4 minutes left in the program. Tony, I'm going to go to you. I'm talking now about 20 years ago. I sat with a group of people caught up in the criminal justice system in the state of Maryland, and it was about 20 of them. And I met them in the evening, and we were talking about work. And I think that probably 17 out of the 20 were unemployed. These individuals were, you know, certainly not a risk to public safety. All of them had skills. All of them had backgrounds. And yet the frustration that they expressed of not being able to find work was strong. And they essentially told me, look, Leonard, if we don't find work, what's to stop us from going back to doing what we used to do?
Sure.
I mean, it was powerful, it was strong, and it was depressing all at the same time, because these people were not a threat to public safety. What do you say to folks under supervision? What do you say to folks to keep their spirits up and to keep them moving in the right direction?
I'm a big believer in hope, and I point to examples. I point to the Kenny Trices or the Monica Womacks of the world. I speak to the importance of being resilient and remaining steadfast to hold on until the opportunity comes. And we also bring up definitely what's the alternative. And we bring up those children, right, in the risk of leaving them again, and that they need you in spite of, you know. And I think one of the things for this country, we really got to think about this, though. We're the number one jailer in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 million people incarcerated, and 90% of that 2 million will return to the community. It's imperative that we create systems that will allow those people to integrate back into the workforce, so that there's 1.7 million children with an incarcerated parent that's mm-hmm. under the age of 18. So these are issues that affect education. These are issues that affect public safety. So and we talk to our clients and our job seekers in a way in which we keep them in tune with how they affect how society works. And so that's how we keep them motivated to stay positive.
Charlie and Corey, we only have a little bit less than a minute. What do you tell employers? You're looking somebody right in the eye through this program. What do you tell employers? How is hiring folks from CSOSA, from parole and probation throughout the country, how is it going to affect their bottom line?
Right. Well, I look at it like this. Hire the best person for the job, period.
Mm-hmm.
The best person for the job, period. Not based off what they did 15, 10, 5 years ago. Based off what you need for your organization, what's the position that needs to be fulfilled, and hire the best candidate, regardless of their past.
Do not let the criminal history stand in the way of giving that person objective appraisal.
Because you can be letting go a key person for that organization.
One of your best employees. Charlie, exactly. Give me your 30-second response.
I just believe that, you know, people deserve a second chance.
Okay.
So, you know, in my organization, primarily 95% of my people are returning citizens. And I also believe that at the end of the day, we all people. And it's a people aspect of this thing. And we got to think everybody, anybody who not working and want to take care of their family, in my eyes, is a threat to public safety. So you know, when we, you know, cut off those opportunities to individuals, we create those issues.
Our guests today have been Charlie Whitaker, CEO of Career Path, and Corey Laborde. He's the facilities manager for the Greater Mount Calvary Holy Church, and Tony Lewis, job developer for CSOSA. Our website, www.csosa.gov, www.csosa.gov. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We want everybody to have themselves a very pleasant day.